And welcome, everyone, to the Westphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is Liberty Messaging and Westphere Application Server version 8.5.5. The presenters are Sonali Samatre and Priti Ferkante. Sonali is the worldwide test lead for IBM Webster Application Server SI Bus and is responsible for the functional and system verification testing for the major product and fixed pack releases. Priti has been involved both in manual testing as well as automated testing of various components of Webster Application Server. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Sonali.
Thanks, Kathy, for the introduction. Hello, everyone, for taking time to attend the session. We'll now move on to the presentation deck. I'm at the agenda slide number 2. This session will discuss some of the important aspects of Liberty Messaging introduced in Westphere Application Server version 8.5.5. We'll start with a brief introduction to Liberty Messaging, learn how message handling happens, and also learn how to configure for a point-to-point and public-subscribe messaging. This session will also provide insights into JMS remote client connectivity, securing JMS messaging using authentication and authorization. We'll also discuss about the configuration details of message-driven beams and achieving interoperability between Liberty and full-profile Webflow application server. Moving on to slide number 3. Liberty Messaging is an embedded messaging feature in the Liberty profile. It is a composable, flexible, and dynamic JMS messaging engine that runs within the Liberty profile. It is JMS 1.1 compliant and supports both point-to-point and PubSub messaging models. Now, Liberty Messaging runs only in the Liberty runtime, and you can use the Liberty Feature Manager to enable or disable the messaging features as required. Because the messaging runtime is highly composable, you can enable the basic messaging features for the runtime and dynamically enable more messaging features such as security, transactions, and remote communication based on your requirement. Having said that, Liberty Messaging can be classified into two parts. One is the JMS server runtime, which provides all the runtime capabilities for connections, transactions, persistence, security, and so on. And the second is the JMS client connectivity. Now, what this does is it provides the resource adapter support to allow JMS clients to perform synchronous and asynchronous messaging activities. The messaging engine runs as a singleton instance in a Liberty profile, which means that at any specific time, there can be only one messaging engine that is running in a Liberty kernel. Liberty messaging subcomponents are implemented as OSGI bundles that can be enabled or disabled based on the user requirements. Now, before moving on, it's worth to talk in brief about OSGI, since Liberty Profile is built on OSGI technologies. To give a brief info on OSGI, as we all know, OSGI stands for Open Services Gateway Initiative. Now, developing with OSGI technology means developing bundles, which are also referred as the OSGI components. Bundles are nothing but modules. They hide their internals from other bundles and communicate through well-defined services. Now, hiding internals means more freedom to change later. This not only reduces the number of bugs, it also makes bundles simpler to develop because bundles implement a piece of functionality through well-defined interfaces. So, needless to say, the OSGI framework is really dynamic. It can update bundles on the fly and services can come and go. Bundles can be installed, started, stopped, updated, and uninstalled without bringing down the whole system. So that's a good benefit. Another advantage is lazy loading. Now, lazy in software is good, isn't it? And the OSGI technology has many mechanisms in place to do things only when they're really needed. For example, bundles can be started eagerly, but they can also be configured to only start when another bundle is using them. Services can be registered, but only created when they are used. So this results in saving tremendous runtime costs. So that was a brief on OSGI technology. Now coming back to the architecture of the Liberty profile. Now we will be talking about feature tags and feature managers, so a brief on how it functions, right? So in Liberty profile, as I mentioned, OSGI services are used to manage component life cycles and the injection of dependencies and configuration. The server process comprises a single JVM, the Liberty kernel, and any number of optional features. This feature code and most of the kernel code runs as OSGI bundles within the OSGI framework. Features provide the programming models and services, you can say, that are required by our application, and the kernel launcher bootstraps the system and starts the OSGI framework. So the configuration is passed, and then the configured features are loaded by the feature manager. So this kernel extensively uses OSGI services to provide a highly dynamic runtime environment. The OSGI configuration admin service, it manages the system configuration, and the declarative services component manages the life cycle of system services. So that's how the entire cycle works. So we have something called file monitor service, which detects the application and configuration file changes, and the logging service also, which writes messages and debugs information to the local file system. So these features are specified in the system configuration file, and for Liberty we have one-stop configuration file, which is called server.xml file, and other included server.xml files. So this server configuration file populates this configuration admin service, which injects the feature configuration into the feature manager service. Then the feature manager maps each feature name to a list of bundles that provides the feature. And then these bundles are installed into the OSGI framework and started. The feature manager responds to any configuration managers changes by dynamically adding and removing features while the server is running. You need not restart the server for the changes to take effect. So that's one advantage of Liberty profile over full WAS profile. Now we have something called runtime services as well, which provides some configuration default settings so that the configuration you need to specify is kept to a minimum. Right? So you specify the features you need along with any additions or overrides to the system default settings in the server.xml file. You might also choose to structure your configuration into a number of separate files that are again linked to the parent server.xml file by using an include syntax. So when the server is started, right, at the server startup, when the user configuration files are changed, the kernel configuration management parses your configuration and applies it over the system default settings. The set of configuration properties that belongs to each service is then injected into the service each time the configuration is updated. Hence, the messaging runtime and the other messaging subcomponents are run as OSGI bundles in the OSGI framework. And this enables the Liberty kernel to load or unload the messaging bundles based on the usage. For example, if the user does not use the messaging security, right, then the bundles that are related to the messaging security are not initialized. The figure in the deck shows the components that are required for performing various messaging flows but are not part of the messaging core time. They can be enabled or disabled based on your requirement. So that's all I had for this slide. Moving on to slide number 4. This slide talks about various features present in Liberty Messaging version 8.5.5. So the various features as listed are WAS JMS Server, WAS JMS Client, WAS JMS Security, WMQ JMS Client, and JMS MDB 3.1. to deploy messaging applications that use JMS, that is Java Messaging Service, you must add the WASP JMS server and WASP JMS client features to the server.xml file. The WASP JMS Server 1.0 feature provides support for applications that use Java Messaging Service 1.1 specifications. Now, in a development environment, if you want to run the JMS application and JMS messaging runtime components on the same server, you can configure the WASP JMS Server 1.0 and WASP JMS Client 1.1 features on the same server. In this scenario, the application is deployed on the same server where the messaging engine and the JMS resources exist. And when the application and messaging engine are deployed on the same server, the application can connect to the messaging engine either over TCP/IP or in-memory API function calls. So you can configure the WASP JMS Security 1.0 feature to enable secure connection of the application to the messaging engine. If you want to use message-driven beans as one of the consumers, you can use the JMS MDB feature. The slide shows excerpts from the server.xml tag. Now, we have been talking about a feature for quite some time. Now, what is a feature in Liberty? Features are nothing but the units of functionality by which you can control the pieces of the runtime environment that are loaded into a particular server. You use the configuration file server.xml to declare which features you want to load. Now, this set of features is enclosed within the feature manager element and each feature within the feature sub-element, as you can see in the example given. You can specify any feature supported in the server configuration file, and some features include other features within them. So at runtime, the feature manager computes the combined list of content that is required to support the requested set of features. When you change the feature configuration, the feature manager recalculates the list of required bundles, stops and uninstalls those bundles that are no longer required, and installs and starts any additions. All features are therefore designed to cope with other features that are being dynamically added or removed. Similarly, you can declare WASP JMS Server and WASP JMS Client within Feature Manager tag, which is a must for the messaging flows to work. We have another feature called WASP JMS MQ Client. So through the WebSphere MQ messaging provider in the Liberty profile, JMS messaging application can use your WMQ system, WebSphere MQ system, as an external provider of JMS messaging resources. For the scope of today's session, we'll limit ourselves to WASP JMS Server and WASP JMS Client. Okay, moving on to slide number 5. This slide talks about how messages are handled in Liberty messaging. Destinations, which can be a queue or a topic, are always localized to the messaging engine where the destinations are defined. Now, if the application needs to send or receive a message from a destination, it must always connect to this messaging engine that localizes the destination. Some of the use case scenarios are where the JMS application is residing in the same Liberty server where the ME is, or where the JMS application is residing in another Liberty server, or the JMS consumer is in the full profile WAS, thus being interoperable with the Liberty profile. We'll discuss more about interoperability in later section in this session. Moving on to slide number 6. Now, Liberty Messaging supports three types of JMS application connectivity. The application can run in any of the following ways. In a Liberty profile, that is hosting the messaging engine, in a different Liberty profile, that is not hosting any messaging engine, and in a WebSphere application server full profile. So Liberty Messaging supports both in-process memory calls and TCP/IP connectivity for applications. When the JMS application is deployed in the same JVM where the messaging engine is running, the application can communicate with the in-process messaging engine without going over the TCP/IP layer. This provides significant performance benefits for the application to send and receive messages. Whereas the JMS applications that are running on the Liberty profile that is not hosting the messaging engine must connect over TCP/IP in order to communicate with the remote messaging engine. Slide number 7. So this slide talks about how to configure point-to-point messaging for a single Liberty profile server. Now, in a development environment, if you want to run the JMS application and JMS messaging runtime components on the same server, you can configure the WASP JMS Server 1.0 feature and WASP JMS Client 1.1 feature on the same server. In this scenario, the application is deployed on the same server where the messaging engine is and the JMS resources exist on the same server. When the application and the messaging engine are deployed on the same server, the application can connect to the messaging engine through in-memory API function calls. You can configure point-to-point messaging such as sending of messages to your queue or receiving of messages from a queue. The first step towards is to configure the messaging features in the server.xml file. If you want to perform a JNDI lookup, then you must also add the JNDI 1.0 feature. So if you look at the slide shown in the examples, in the feature manager tag, we have added those two features, JMS server and JMS client, and also the JNDI 1.0 for the lookup. The next step is to configure the messaging engine to create a queue called Liberty Queue, as shown in the example. So that is surrounded by a messaging engine tag, and inside that we have a queue tag. Next, we need to declare a queue connection factory resource to create a connection to the messaging engine as shown. So here we are doing a point messaging with a queue. So the tag needs to start with the JMS queue connection factory. If you're doing a secured mode of point-to-point messaging, then in the properties.wasjms tag, you can add the username password as well. We'll discuss about it in the later section. Next, we have to declare a queue resource, which is a JMS resource, to create a producer or consumer session to the queue, which we defined in the messaging engine tag called the Liberty Queue. So now, once the server.xml is configured, you can put your JMS application in the drop-ins folder of the server, Liberty Profile Server created, and invoke send and receive messages based on your need. Moving on to slide number 8. This slide shows a sample configuration for publish or subscribe messaging from a topic space on a single Liberty Profile Server. Similar to the point-to-point messaging flow, the first step is to ensure all the required features are added in the server.xml file. And also, if you want to perform a JNDI lookup, then you must also add the JNDI 1.0 feature. Next step is same, to configure to the messaging engine and to create a topic space called sports, as shown in the example. So here there is a small mistake. The messaging engine tag is missing. But yeah, as we discussed in the previous slide, this has to be surrounded with the messaging engine tag. Next step is to declare a topic connection factory resource to create a connection to the messaging engine, as shown in the example, and then declare a topic space resource to create a public pub sub session to the topic space ports. And finally, we declare a topic space JMS resource to create a PubSub session to the same topic space ports. Here you can also specify, the exact topic name and also the time to live, like for what time the messages will be alive, after which it will get expired. There are other properties also. You can follow the info center wherein you'll get the details of each and every property. There's a huge list of properties that can be added. So once that is done, use your JMS application, put in the drop-ins folder of the server and invoke PubSub messaging. Moving on to the next slide, that is slide number 9. Now, in a typical production scenario, users might want to run the WASP JMS Server 1.0 and the JMS application on separate servers to distribute the workload. In such scenarios, you can configure the WASP JMS Client 1.1 Liberty feature on one server, which acts as the client, and configure the WASP JMS Server 1.0 feature on a different server. This will act as a server, so it is a client-to-server communication per se. The JMS applications that are deployed on a remote server always use TCP/IP to connect to the messaging engine that is running on a different server. To enable JMS messaging on multiple servers, you must configure the WASP JMS Client 1.1, as I said, on a different Liberty profile server. Then configure the required JMS resources like Queue Connection Factory and JMS Queue to enable the JMS application to perform a remote TCP/IP connection with the remote messaging engine. We have to configure remote server address property in the connection factory. This remote server address property refers to the server that has to be contacted where the messaging engine exists. We'll discuss in detail about this property in a bit later. Okay, so having done the client-side configuration, let's move to slide number 10 to see how the server-side configuration is done. To enable JMS messaging on multiple servers, that is a server-side configuration, you must configure the WASP JMS Server 1.0 feature and not the client. As shown in the slide, you can see the difference. And on the Liberty Profile server that is hosting the messaging engine, and to initialize the messaging engine to accept the incoming request, we have this WASP JMS endpoint tag. So that will basically also define the WASP JMS port and WASP JMS SSL port. So by default, the values are 7276 and 7286, but if you want to override these values, you can specify 9011 as shown in the example, 9100 as SSL port or any other port you feel free to use. That's all I have in this slide. Moving on to the next slide, that is slide number 11. This slide talks about how clients can connect to a remote AMI over TCP/IP. Now, JMS applications can either connect to the messaging engine on a secured or non-secured port. As I mentioned, by default, JMS server listens for incoming data on 7276, that is the unsecured port, and 7286, that is the secured port. These default ports can be overridden by using the WASP JMS endpoint option in server.xml, as shown here in the example. So basically, this WASP JMS endpoint element is added to enable the messaging engine to accept the remote incoming messaging communication over TCP/IP with and without SSL. Adding WASP JMS endpoint, as I said, is optional. By default, the ports 7276 and 7286 will be required, but if you want to specify a different port, then WASP JMS endpoint can be configured. Similarly, by default, a JMS client application tries to connect to port 7276 and to 7286 for unsecured and secured port, respectively. So, the property declaration of remote server address is something like this. You give a host name, colon, then port, then colon, a mode. You can see how it is specified in the example. Here, the host name is the name of the host where the messaging engine is running. And port is the JMS inbound port that is configured at the server side. And mode is bootstrap basic messaging if SSL is not used, and bootstrap secure messaging if SSL is used. If the remote server address is not specified, then the JMS application tries to connect to a local messaging engine by default in the same Liberty profile. That was all about the JMS client remote connectivity. Moving on to slide number 12. Next couple of slides, we'll discuss how to enable secure messaging for Liberty profile. There are two vital concepts involved here. When we say secure messaging flow, it involves authentication followed by authorization. Now, authentication validates if user has permission to connect to the messaging engine, whereas authorization validates if user has sufficient roles or permissions to access the messaging resources, that is, queues or topics. You can use the WASP JMS security 1.0 Liberty feature to make the WASP JMS Server 1.0 feature work in a secure mode. Securing the messaging resources ensures that only authenticated and authorized users can access the messaging resources such as queues, topics, and other messages. Moving on to slide number 13. This slide talks about authenticating users to connect to the messaging engine. In order for this to happen, you must validate the user credentials so that the user is authenticated to connect to the messaging engine. The first step towards this is to configure the user registry. Once the user adds WASP JMS security feature, adding a user registry is mandated. There are three types of user registries supported for this purpose. First one is Quick Start Security. This user registry supports only one user. This option is the simplest way of specifying a username and password to authenticate the application connection. You can use the Quick Start Security element to enable a simple one-user security setup for the Liberty profile. You can define this element in the server.xml file. In the example shown, the Quick Start Security element is used to define a single user named Liberty with a password of Liberty123. One important thing to note here is you can ensure that the raw password is not specified. Like I have mentioned your Liberty123, but in a real production environment, you have to encode the password. So to encode the password, use the security utility tool available with the Liberty profile. It will be present in the WLP bin folder. Next user registry is the basic user registry. This user registry supports multiple users and declaration of user groups. You can configure the Liberty profile to authenticate and authorize users by using the basic user registry. You can set up a basic user registry and configure multiple role mapping in the server.xml file for a Liberty profile server. Note that the configuration of the basic registry overrides the Quick Start Security registry. That means in a server.xml, if you have mentioned both Quick Start Security and basic registry defined, it honors the basic registry configuration. It won't go by the Quick Start Security configuration. The next one is the LDAP registry, Lightweight Directory Access Protocol, as we know. It uses external registries such as Microsoft Active Directory, IBM Directory Server, even the one from Tivoli. You can configure an LDAP server with the Liberty profile for authentication as shown in the example in the slide. You can also mention failover LDAP server in case the primary one is unavailable. Any username and password that is specified in the LDAP registry can be specified in the connection factory. You can define only one registry type in the server.xml, either a basic registry or an LDAP registry. If you try to put multiple user registries, you will get a warning or error in the log file while starting the server. That's all about defining user registries for authentication. Next, moving on to slide number 14. This slide is about authorization. After authentication is done, you must validate if the authenticated users have sufficient permissions to access the messaging resources, that is, queues or topics, to perform actions like sending, receiving, or browsing. So it's a two-step process, right, securing. First, authentication is done, and then the authorization is done. For this, we need to configure the messaging security element in the server.xml file to define the role and permission for each user, which will identify the action that they can perform on the messaging resource. Now, by default, none of the users have permission to access any of the destinations that are defined in the messaging engine. The permissions for the destination can be defined in the messaging security element, as you can see in the slide. Here, user 1 and user 3 and the group developers can perform the send and browse actions on Q1. They can also perform all actions, that is all three actions, send, browse, and receive, on the topic sports/cricket in topic space 1. Similarly, users user 5 and user 6 and the group testers can perform the browse action on Q1 and the receive action on all the topics in topic space 1. This is how you define it. Okay, moving on to slide number 15. Now, once the configuration is done for accomplishing authentication and authorization, we need to provide the user credentials in the properties.wasjms tag of QConnectionFactory if you're performing a point-to-point messaging flow, or to the topic connection factory if you're performing a PubSub messaging flow as shown in the example. So for both the tags, under properties.wasjms, you mention a username and password. So if there is a mismatch, then there will be an error while running your server. In the runtime, when you're doing a messaging flow, there will be an error shown in the log file. That's all from my side. I'll be handing over the control to Preeti for rest of the sessions. Thank you.
Thank you, Sonali. Hello, everybody. Today, I will be taking you through the configuration of the message-driven beams and the interoperability between the Liberty Profile Server and the Full WAF Profile. So, let's quickly move on to slide number 16. So, just like the Full WAF Profile, the Liberty Server also supports the use of message-driven beams to consume messages asynchronously either from a queue destination or from a topic destination. So, as the figure shows, MDBs can be configured to listen to a local destination, that is, the MDB and the messaging engine will run on the same Liberty server. Or, they can also be configured to connect to a destination that is residing on a different Liberty profile. So, like Sonali has mentioned earlier, in order to enable the MDB support, we will have to add the JMS MDB 3.1 feature in the server.xml. Moving on to slide number 17. So this slide discusses the configuration of MDB using the activation specification tag. First, let's have a look at MDB for the queue destination. Here in the activation specification tag, you can see the ID, which represents the MDB. The format will be application name / the module name / the beam name. Next, the destination ref property determines the queue to which the MDB is listening. Here, the destination ref value must be same as the ID mentioned in the JMS queue. In this case, it is JNDI/MDB queue. In the JMS queue, the queue name, which is Q1, is the physical queue on the messaging engine. One more thing that has to be done to configure the MDB is to, if you have like an application EAR file, that EAR file must be placed under the apps folder under the server root directory. Moving on to slide number 18. So this slide shows an example of configuring MDBs for the topic destination. As in case of queues, here also the destination ref is the ID mentioned in the JMS topic. The default value for destination type is Q, and hence to override that or to change that, here we have mentioned it as javax.jms.topic. We've also mentioned the client ID and the subscription name. The MDBs can be configured either as a durable consumer or a non-durable consumer with the help of the subscription durability property. By default, it is always a non-durable consumer. Another thing is that JMS 1.1 supports the sharing of durable subscriptions. So in order to enable the sharing, you have to set the shared durable subscription value to true. Here in the JMS topic tag, we have not mentioned any topic space name or the topic name, and hence it will listen to the default.topic.space, which is the default topic space created when you create an ME. If the MDB has to listen to a remote Liberty server, then we add another property called the remote server address in the activation specification tag, where we will mention the bootstrap and the host of the remote Liberty server. So moving on to slide number 19. This slide shows a small code snippet of an MDB class file. Here we've used annotations. So these annotations can be used to override the properties that we have mentioned in the activation specification tag. For example, in our earlier example, we had mentioned the destination. We had not mentioned the username and the password. That can be mentioned here, or if you have given a different destination value there and you provide a different name here, the value mentioned in the annotation will take precedence and that will be valued. So as soon as there is a message on the destination that the MDB is listening to, the onMessage method gets invoked and the message is processed. The user can add his or her own implementation of what the next steps have to be once the message is received. For example, here we are only printing the message when it arrives. You may want to send a reply or forward the message to another destination. All the implementation that is needed can be added here in the onMessage method. Moving on to slide number 20. The next two slides will discuss the interoperability between the Liberty profile and the full VAS profile. The figure shows how a full VAS profile consisting of an ME and two applications, one of which connects to the ME on the same server, that is an in-memory call, while the other application connects to ME on a Liberty profile server over TCP/IP. Similarly, applications running on Liberty profile server can connect to ME on the full VAS server. Moving on to slide 21. Here we've taken an example where an application on the Liberty profile server wishes to connect to a queue destination, say named Q1, on a service integration bus named Bus1, running on the same machine. In order to do so, we specify the host and the bootstrap port in the remote server address and the bus name as Bus1 in the connection factory tag. The name of the queue destination to which you want to connect to is specified in the JMS queue tag. Likewise, if you wish to connect to a Liberty profile ME from an application running on the full profile, always configure the bus name as the default bus. For a Liberty profile server, the name of the bus is always a default bus. And also, in the connection factory, configure the provider endpoint to specify the host and port where the Liberty ME is running. So moving on to the next slide. Okay. This brings us to the end of today's session in which we have discussed introduction to Liberty messaging in WebSphere application server version 8.5.5, configuring for point-to-point and publish-subscribe messaging, JMS client remote connectivity, securing the Liberty messaging, that is authentication and authorization, message-driven beams, interoperability between Liberty profile and full VAS profile. So thank you everyone for joining in, and over to Kathy now.
Thank you, Sonali and Priti, for a great presentation. And now we're moving on to the question and answer session. There is one question that is in the group chat. It is actually came in on slide number 3, but the question is JMS 2.0 supported as IBM has introduced an MQ 8.0?
Yeah, so JMS 2.0 is not yet in the official release, but in plan. Okay. Till 8.5.5 release, JMS 1.1 is what is supported.
All right, there are no more other questions. So at this time, I would like to conclude this session. We hope that the information presented today has been valuable to you. Thank you very much for presenting today, Sonali and Priti.